Hey, hit me!
Are you ready for the deadliest news, issues, comments, and people? Well, on now is National Talk Black with Trendy Trev, going live from BBM through the National Indigenous Radio Service. Give us a call now, 1-800-422-416. Black with Trendy Trev.
Yes, very good morning, you deadly mob. Welcome back to your daily program, National Talk Black. It is I, Trevor Tim, Trendy Trev Murray from the Curry. I come to you live from First Nation Radio Station here in Cairns on Yindinji Country. That's BBM Bumblebrip Media, 98.7 FM. And we go across the nation thanks to NERS, National Digital Radio Service. Big shout out, NERS. Have you say, Yan up strong, you mob. Now, growing up Torres Strait Islander in Australia. That's the book, third book of the deadly sister, Samantha Faulkner. And got Samantha on the line. Let's talk about it. Samantha, good morning, sister. How are you?
Hey, good morning, Trevor. Yeah, not too bad, thank you. Coming to you from Ngunnawal Country in Canberra.
Cold city. Thank you, darling. Stay warm.
Warm sunshine and sky. Sky's blue, so can't complain.
Can't complain. Thank you for coming to the program. Before we start, sister, let the mob know who your mob, where you're from.
My mother's a Drummond, and Vicky Drummond. And grandfather is Ali Drummond. So I was born on TI and raised there. And so through Drummond's side, got connection to Badu and Moa Islands up in the Torres Strait. And through, again, grandfather's side, connected to Wutati and Yarragana mob on Cape as well too.
Beautiful, lovely footprint. And look, a big shout out to your beautiful cousin Barbara Drummond, who just dropped off some scones here at the Bummer Pepper Media for our morning tea. So two deadly sister.
Don't make me hungry already.
Listen, congratulations, your third book. Let's talk about this third book, Growing Up Torres Strait Islander in Australia. So you're author of two other books. We'll get into, well, mention those two other books. What was your first book, sister?
Yeah, Lifelong Ali Drummond, A Life in the Torres Strait. So I spent some time with my grandfather, who lived till he was about 98, before he, passed on. And just sitting down having yarns to him about what it was like being a pearl shell diver in the Torres Strait. And what it was like growing up in the sort of like early to mid-1900s. And, the life was different then, but it was also, very interesting working up on TI during World War II within the Civilian Construction Corporation, being around during that time of World War II, but also what it was like cutting cane by hand in far north Queensland as well.
Okay, that was that book. And your second book?
Second one was Palmley, Torres Strait Islanders in Canberra. So working with members and community of the ACT Torres Strait Islander Corporation here in Canberra. And just looking at how Torres Strait mob here maintain that connection to family, culture, identity, back home, and keep the culture alive when you're so far away too from home.
So
just the interviews with people, really. So that was kind of, I guess, leading up to this next one.
Next one, here it is, the third book, Growing Up Torres Strait Islander in Australia. So give us a bit of background in this. I mean, virtually the title says it all, doesn't it?
Yeah, I guess this one was a long time coming. I think seeing all the deadly growing up stories coming out. This one's the eighth in the series of Growing Up in Australia. So many people might have seen the Growing Up Aboriginal in Australia that was edited by Anita Heiss as well too. This is like an anthology of 19 contributors. There's four excerpts in there from people like Eddie Koike Mabo, Ellie Gaffney, Thomas Lower, Aina Titisi, and of course the other 19 contributors are all deadly people too, like Lenora Thacker, Jimmy Barney, Gillian Boyd-Bowie.
Some good names there, sister. Some good names.
Oh, yeah, of course.
And fantastic.
Plenty more missed out too, so,
Exactly.
If, It's only a taste, really, I guess.
Of course, yeah.
Yeah.
So it's painting a picture as, well, and educating the people of the world that when you talk about the Big Island, Australia, there's two nationalities. There's First Nation, Aboriginal and Torres Strait Island. And it's good to hear the Torres Strait Island side of things as well. Hey, sis.
I think it's important to showcase the different cultures and identities, but also show that same time, you know, we still have that love for family, connection to country, and, you know, we all want the best for the future, for our kids, for the next generation as well, too. Some shared themes along there as well, too.
Yeah, and so, like, I look at my beautiful father, who's a First Nation man, Murray man from Cloncurry, Murray from the Curry, but all our mob, there's Dumuji and Mornington Island, the Wanyi and Gungalita mob, and then my beautiful mother with me in spirit, Darnley Island Arab, you know. So best of both worlds. So, and it's great to hear both sides of the story, so to speak.
I think it's very important, and also, you know, a gift for all Australians as well, too, that should be proud. There's Aboriginal culture, Torres Strait Islander culture. We can all share and learn from one another. But, you know, we all live on this beautiful continent too, one time, and we've got to look after it as well too, wherever we are, for future generations.
And I feel that non-Indigenous Australians should be embracing our culture. I mean, we're talking about the longest living culture on planet Earth. That in itself is, a trophy, you could say. It's something that we should all embrace. I mean, when you talk about the first people of the first people, of all the people, I mean, that in itself is on this big island, Australia, you know?
That's right. And some of the yarns in growing up Torres Strait Islander touch on, you know, what families teach you, what your father teaches you, you know, what it's like growing up in the Torres Strait. But also, for a lot of Torres Strait Islanders, they're born and raised on mainland Australia too. So there's that different experience of growing up.
Exactly. But our culture is strong. We carry it wherever we go, don't we, you know?
Of course, that connection and that love. And also we like to, you know, showcase it too. We like to sing, dance, have our own distinct kai kai too. So, you know, and get that. That's how we celebrate it as well too.
Exactly. Well, we are storytellers, and here you are, an author of three books now regarding the Torres Strait Island space, and telling the story and educating the people. It's a bridge builder too, isn't it?
That leads me to, there are some teacher's notes on the Black Ink website, that's for years 7 to 12. But, you know, just go and have a look at it. There's something in there for everyone. And really good to see that there are teacher's notes. And there'll also be an audio book as well, too, coming out soon. And I'm looking forward to hearing that as well. I'm not narrating it, but I'm looking forward to hearing it as well.
Yay. Fantastic. Well, thank you very much for sharing. To Deli, our sister, author, third book, Growing Up Torres Strait Islander in Australia, that is out now. And congratulations, and looking forward to the next book. Keep doing what you're doing, and good yarn with you. You stay warm, my sister.
Yeah, it's up for that, Trevor. Thank you.
Yawo, eh?
All right. Yeah, yawo. Small yawo.
Yawo, small yawo.
All right.
Beautiful yarn there. Samantha Faulkner, author of the book Growing Up Torres Strait Islander in Australia, and the editor of Growing Up Torres Strait Islander in Australia. This is her third book, two other books as well, as she mentioned, and it is fantastic. And yes, we are storytellers. And this is your daily program, National Talk Black. And we are live at the First Nation Radio Station here in Cairns on Yidinji Country, BBM Bumblebee Media, 98.7 FM. And we go across the nation thanks to NERS, National News Radio Service, and a big shout out to all our First Nation radio stations across this beautiful country of ours, a Deadly Black Network. Too Deadly.
Up in the sky, so far away, there is a place for everyone. Moon and the stars, they always shine out on that ocean way. And as the lazy wave rolled by, breezes blowing memories. Oh yes, yes, somewhere there's joy, somewhere there's sorrow. Out on the sea, it's always the same to me. I from T.I., I from T.I., where the wild, wild Wangai tree goes. I from Torres Strait, any place including St. Paul Way, any place and just around by Mabio Bay. I from T.I., I from T.I., well, I'm from T.I. too. I from T.I., I from T.I., where the wild, wild Wangai tree go. I from Torres Strait, any place including St. Paul Way, any place and just around by Mabio Bay. I from T.I., I from T.I., well, I'm from T.I. too. Are you from T.I.? Are you from T.I.? Well, I'm from T.I. too.
Yenda banapi bamanda, yenda bakat yenda bamanda. We got Talk Black with Uncle Trevor, Murray from the Curry. Call in on 1-800-422-416, 98.7 FM, BBM.
A shy black boy who came to the city to learn about life, and now his people lost their lives. His parents died when he was just a child, and now his life is mystified. Black boy,
black boy,
black boy,
black boy.
The color of your skin is your pride.
My name's Jared Harbrow from the Gold Coast Suns. You're tuned in to National Talk Black with Trendy Trev.
1-800-422-416.
Yeah, good morning, mob. Welcome back to your daily program, National Talk Black. Trendy Trev, Murray from the Curry, your host for your daily program, National Talk Black. And we're live at the First Nation Radio Station here in Cairns on Yidinji Country, BBM Bumbabrip Media, 98.7 FM. And go across the nation thanks to NERS, National Radio Service. All right, what Australians should know about meningococcal disease? A rare but devastating disease, invasive meningococcal disease, IMD, can progress rapidly and result in death within 24 to 48 hours of symptom onset. While cases typically peak in winter and early spring, they can occur at any time of the year, with symptoms of IMD difficult to recognise as they may be similar to flu-like illnesses. With children less than 2 years of age and young adults aged 15 to 24 most at risk, experts are advising Aussies to know the signs and symptoms of the disease to act quickly as temperatures cool. Look, with that, we're going to catch up a yarn now. Dr. Charlotte Hesp, Head of General Practice at University of Notre Dame School of Medicine in Sydney. All right. Thank you very much, Dr. Charlotte, coming to the program.
It's a pleasure. Thank you for having me.
Can you tell us more about IMD, please?
Invasive meningococcal disease is a really rare disorder, but one that is potentially devastating and very rapid. So it's a bacterial infection that causes an infection, particularly around the brain. It affects mostly children under the age of 2 and adolescents between the ages of 15 and 24. And the symptoms that people present with can range from high fevers, headaches, confusion, loss of appetite, not drinking, and for the older children, neck stiffness.
Thank you. How does IMD transmit between individuals?
IMD is a bacterial infection. It's a bacteria that lives in our throats, and because it lives in noses and throats, it can be spread through coughing, sneezing, living in close quarters with each other, so sharing living space, and obviously kissing. So it is an infection that can be spread just between people who live close together, but also are friends and acquaintances.
What advice do you have regarding the IMD awareness?
So for me as a GP, I'd really like families to have conversations with each other about what this illness might look like and to understand how to actually recognise it if symptoms arise. I really prefer that people ask the question about whether they should be worried about the illness that their child or teenager has than that they don't seek attention.
Thank you, Doctor. And where can Australians go to find out more?
There is some really good information out there. First step is asking your own GP or your local pharmacist, or you can go to a website which is called nomeningococcal.com.au. Please go and find out more. Knowing enough information can save lives.
Dr. Charlotte, thank you so very much.
Thank you. Have a good day.
Have a great day. All the best to you. Thank you. So there we have it. That's Dr. Charlotte Hesp, Head of General Practice at University of Notre Dame School of Medicine, Sydney. And the question is what Australians should know about meningococcal disease. Very important space. Let's not make you laxy-daisy. Check with, of course, your doctors, your First Nation radio, First Nation health organisations as well. Always check with your First Nation health organisations. Thank you very much. Stay tuned, your mob. Add to the conversation, National Talk Black, Trendy Trev, Murray from the Curry. Too deadly.
Up in the sky, so far away, there is a place. Are you from TI? Where the wild, wild, wild night tree grows? Are you from Torres Strait or any place, including St. Paul Way? Any place is just around by Mario Way. Are you from TI? Are you from TI? Well, I'm from TI too. Up in the sky, so far away, a place for everyone. The moon and stars that always shine out on the ocean wave. And when the lazy waves roll by, like breezes blowing, memories, oh yes, yes. Somewhere there's joy, somewhere there's sorrow. Out on the sea, it's always a place for. Are you from TI? Are you from TI? Where the wild, 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 wild,
Oh, Have you heard about the Territory Stolen Generations Redress Scheme?
It's for Stolen Generations survivors who were removed from their families or communities in the Northern Territory, ACT or Jervis Bay.
It's a financial and wellbeing package for acknowledgement and to help with healing.
The scheme's open for applications now.
To find out more about the Territory's Redress Scheme, call 1800 566 111
or visit territoriesredress.gov.au.
Authorised by the Australian Government, Canberra.
G'day, you mob. This is Tanya Kernaghan with Trendy Trev, and you're tuned in to National Talk Black.
Call us now, 1-800-422-416.
G'day, this is Guy Sebastian here, hanging up on our National Talk Black, your big yarning show, BBM 98.7.
Yes, very good morning, you daily mob. Welcome back to your daily program, National Talk Black. It is I, Trevor Tim, Trendy Trev, Murray from the Curry. I come to you live from First Nation Radio Station here in Cairns on Yidinji Country. That's BBM Bumblebee Media, 98.7 FM. We go across the nation thanks to NERS, National Radio Service. You can have your say by calling us on that daily number, 1-800-422-416. All right, now, as nominations open for the Australian Mental Health Prize, that happens, it has been open for the 2024 Australian Mental Health Prize since April 22nd, and it'll go right through to July 28th, and the winners will be announced on 22nd of September. And look, we're going to catch up a yarn now with a deadly sister, Megan Krakaru. The proud proud sister is a beacon for First Nation rights, reshaping laws and advocating for the marginalised with Jerry Girigardis. She established NSPTRP, that's the National Suicide Prevention and Trauma Recovery Project. And we've got Megan online. Megan, good morning, sister. How are you?
Good morning, brother. How are you?
I'm well. Thank you very much for coming to the program. Before we start, let the mob know who your mob, where you're from, Megan.
No worries. Sounds good. Megan Cracker. Come from a place called Mount Barker. That's Woggle Kept Country in the southwest corner of Western Australia. Come from a big family. I'm the youngest of 13. A couple of the brothers played with North Melbourne Footy Club back in the day.
Yes, gotcha. Cracker brothers, yes.
Yeah, so.
To Delhi, sister. Looking, so, thank you for coming to the program. Now, your advocacy underscores the urgent need to address First Nations youth suicide, emphasising poverty, discrimination and limited education access as root causes. and you urged robust support systems and intervention to prevent further tragedies. Yes, sister?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, in terms of our people, we have gone from the suicides of 1 in 23 to 1 in 16 in the last decade. That means that it's a leading cause of death for our people right across the country. That's atrocious, and things aren't getting better in terms of suicides or suicidality and support for our people. So the work that we do with the National Suicide Prevention Trauma Recovery Project,
yes,
we support the most marginalised, the vulnerable, the voiceless, the silenced, the unheard, and always trying to make sure that there's platform to very much highlight the deficit truth which exists in our community. Right across the country, First Nations people fall below the poverty line by 40%. In Western Australia, where I come from, it's 60%. Northern Territory, it's 75-80%. In this day and age, particularly with Australia being the 12th richest economy in the world, it's just unacceptable. It's an indictment, not only by the Australian government, but every single government in the various jurisdictions right across the country. Now, people, they need the help. They need the support. There's a lot of trauma in our community, and unaddressed trauma, if it's not addressed, can kill, can lead to disordered thinking. And that's what I see firsthand on a daily basis right across this country, more so in Western Australia where I come from.
Yeah. When you look at those numbers, they're very high. And we talk about COVID-19 as a pandemic. Look, if we're not careful, my sister, this will become a pandemic heading that way.
Right across the country, in the last 3 years, 10,000 people have taken their precious lives. 10,000 people.
Yes.
That is a crisis of our time.
Yes, yes.
When you have 10,000 people take their lives to that dreadful thing called suicide. So that means that 1 in 26 Australians across this country take their lives. That's unacceptable. It's an indictment of the Australian federal governments.
Exactly.
The ways forward are really quite simple. The intense psychosocial support, the assertive outreach, which is 24/7. We need to decolonise the existing mental health support systems because they're not meeting the needs for our people that need it most.
Exactly, exactly. And look, it could also stem back even through school, you know, primary school, high school, and all the above.
Well, that's exactly right. I mean, if we have a look up in the remote communities, there's 1,200 remote communities right across the country. Of that, there's 120,000 people that live in the remote communities. But 35,000 children will never get a secondary education.
Yeah.
That's disgraceful.
Exactly.
In terms of schooling, where I come from in Perth, the metropolitan area, 1 in 2 children will never finish school.
So we're talking about closing gaps in all areas. I mean, this is a gap we need to close because it is widening, isn't it, Megan?
Oh, 100%. So in terms of closing their gap, incarceration, suicide, child removals are not closing. Child removals back in 1997, Child removals in 1997, when they had the Bringing Them Home report, there were 2,000 black kids in care. 2008, the Prime Minister gave the apology to the stolen generation, Mr Rudd. 8,000 black kids in care. Today we have a stifling 22,000 black kids in care. No, it's not getting better. In terms of suicides, as I mentioned, it's gone from 1 in 23 down to 1 in 16, making it the leading cause of death for our people under the ages of 44.
Yes.
So even though there's an excessive amount of money that's being poured into First Nations people and communities, it's not meeting the needs of the ones that I see and work with on a daily basis, Saturday and Sunday included. It's the intense psychosocial support, the assertive outreach, which is 24/7, which is much needed in this community. We see a lot of people out in community, which I across the country, whether it be South Australia, whether it be in New South Wales, some helping as many as what they can with no funding, no support, but incredible hearts like Farlap.
So any money spent this way is not an expense, it's investment. We need to invest in closing this gap, and the government needs to come to the table strongly.
Well, that's exactly right. And we can't keep funding the same, because if we're going to fund the same, we're going to get the same results. That's the reality. And if anything, it's going to get worse. What there is right out in the community, there are many strong Aboriginal local communities doing some powerful work, some that don't get funded in ways that should. We need to ensure that the smaller organisations... an excessive amount of funding is important. is poured into those small organisations to give them agency, to give them more reach, to give them the resources.
Exactly.
Because the reality is in terms of the work that myself and my colleague Jerry Georgiadis does, we're punching well and truly above our weight.
Exactly.
We're calling out, we're speaking with the families. The families are actually taking the highest platforms and they're speaking in media, changing the narrative, changing the education, shifting the public deficit, the public consciousness.
Mm.
And an example of that is the Banksia Hill class action. So the Banksia Hill detention centre is the only youth detention centre in Western Australia. About 3 years ago, partnered up with a firm called Levitt Robinson,
mm-hmm.
lawyers. They're based in Sydney.
Yeah.
We'd taken all these testimonies from young ones in Banksia Hill detention centre. And then the young ones, the older ones, they would speak. And they would speak to media, Four Corners, Current Affairs, you name it, they've spoken. As a result, the public education is there. The public consciousness has now shifted. So there's massive attention on incarceration for young people. Right now in Western Australia, we have 1 in 12 Aboriginal men that are in prison. And a lot of it's got to do with poverty. We have a homeless crisis right through, or a houseless crisis right across the country. So, for example, in Western Australia, where I come from, where there's 21,000 people on the wait list for public housing. What that means is that there's 48, 49,000 people houseless or homeless.
Yep.
Now, if you don't have your own home...
And that's a necessity of life, isn't it, Megan?
You need your own home then.
You do.
And that's a reality.
Yeah.
And for too many people, they speak about us without us. So one of the things that we've made sure that happens, particularly when we're advocating, whether it be homelessness, whether it be incarceration, whether it be child removals, is that the voices of the people are paramount. A young boy, he passed away 10 years old in Perth within the last 3 weeks.
Yep.
And he was in Department of Child Protection Care.
So.
And that went right across the story, right across the country in terms of what happened to this dear little soul.
Mm.
But these are the mum and dad, they wanted to speak. They didn't want his name to go down unheard.
Exactly.
Because right across this country, there are strong laws that stops the person from speaking out if they've been in care.
And
photos can't be used.
Yeah,
names can't be shown. That has to stop.
That's right.
Because what happens is that this young boy has now been laid to rest, rest in peace there, but his name is not out there publicly. His photo can't be shown publicly. His mum and dad, they want his name said. They want the photo shown.
Exactly.
The powerful stories come from the families, and the families are just incredible advocates, incredible human beings, but we are being failed one time after the next, government after the next, and it's just been going on. We are not a business for these people.
Exactly.
And as a result, we must have to stand and fight with courage, with strength, with truth and conviction, and very much highlight the deficit truth from the voices of the people that have been impacted, whether it be by suicide, whether it be by incarceration, whether it be by death in custody, whether it be by homelessness.
Mm.
Our people, they mean something. They stand for something, and they're proud human beings.
My sister, very strong words. Thank you very much. Good sharing with you. Megan, look, you take care. Stay strong, sister. I believe you're in Cairns. How long are you here for, sis?
Until Friday.
Friday.
So we've got the Common Threads conference over here. It's been really quite powerful. There's about 150 people from all parts of the country.
Yes. Common Threads.
So it's been loud. Common Threads, yeah. So it's been loud, proud. There's been beautiful stories that have been exchanged.
Mm.
But it's a pleasure being over here. Much honour.
Yeah, my sister. Well, stay strong. We'll talk soon. Welcome anytime here to Bumma Bripper Media. Stay black, stay deadly, and we'll yarn soon. And all the best to you, Megan.
You're a champion. Thanks, brother, and thank you to all your listeners.
Take care, sis. Bye-bye.
Okay, see you, brother.
Deadly Yande, that's Megan Cracker, and she's established the NSPTRP, a National Suicide Prevention Trauma and Trauma Recovery Project. And look, we're promoting the nominations for the 2024 Australian Mental Health Prize. It's now open since April 22nd, and it will remain open till July 8th. So winners will be announced on 23rd of September. So if you want to nominate somebody or nominate yourself, then go ahead and do so. Australian Mental Health Prize, you can Google that. And we're fostering compassionate communities for mental health. This is your daily program, National Talk Black. And good yarning with you, Mob. We're here live at the First Nation radio station here in Cairns on your dingy country, BB and Bumma Bip Media, 98.7 FM. And we go across the nation thanks to NERS, National News Radio Service. Big shout out, NERS, to Deadly.